it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, 4:02 Pacific Time. The phone lines are open, and they're toll-free, 844-420-RADIO. That's right, 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. Glad to get the number. Going to continue talking a little bit about this whole WOTC, what about the children, what happens during legalization rant, because there's a few more angles to this I want to explore. Though I do have to mention another post that was on the Beaverton Police Department Facebook page. It's interesting how things get into a feed, right? Because you had that story, and it's still at the top of their feed, on the young man who blew smoke in the face of his infant child. And let me just address, High in Hawaii made a point that, you know, it's a bad thing this guy did. He shouldn't have blown smoke in his kid's face. But the family friend is a snitch. And see, now, I don't want to comment too deeply on this because we don't know everything that's involved. But from the description on the Facebook page, this sounds like a baby mama who doesn't want daddy around no more. And daddy's coming around. And in an effort to make sure daddy don't come around no more, family friend brought this to the cops. It seems to me that this would be something you bring to the cops, not so much because you were concerned for the infant's well-being as you wanted to use this as a weapon to get rid of somebody, to do someone in. I mean, all of us, I think, or at least we should, all of us, be very aware of domestic violence and kids being abused and spouses and partners being abused and such. And I don't think there's any of us that would hesitate to call in for any sort, to report any sort of real abuse. At least I hope not. Other than those of us who live in prohibition states where we might be growing a plant or two, and we might have an ounce or two, and the idea of calling the cops sounds like a bad idea, bring too much attention to us. There's always that angle. You want to talk, what about the children? How about protecting the children in these apartment complexes, right? Where one neighbor in the apartment complex has got weed, and the other one's a little abusive, and both of them keep their mouth shut about each other, right? This situation exists in far too many places in America. But that aside, let's put that aside, the fact that prohibition keeps us from calling 911. I think all of us would call in, you know, someone's getting abused, someone's getting beaten, some kid's getting abused or neglected. We want to call that in. That's the right thing to do. The question is, at what point are you calling in for the kid's well-being or for your own agenda? And that's where I think, you know, this one is for someone's own agenda. You know, blowing the smoke in the kid's face doesn't, to me, rise to the level of, you know, in Supreme Court cases, they often make these balancing tests, you know, versus the government's compelling interest versus the interest of the of liberty and freedom and all that. And they have to weigh these things against each other. So to me, the balancing test in this is that generally other people's business is none your business, balanced versus how desperately does this person need some help. And I don't know if blowing weed in a kid's face, even an infant's face, rises to that level where it trips me to want to call the authorities. It might be the thing that's more applicable to the level of me saying, hey, asshole, that's fucked up. Don't do that. Don't blow smoke in your kid's face. Right? It might be that level. It might be the level where I encourage the mother to call it in, perhaps. Maybe if it continues and I continue seeing it and I know nothing's happening, maybe I call it in. But probably not. I don't think this rises to the level of messing with someone's life. And it especially doesn't rise to that level once you realize that it's a Class A felony. Holy crap. You know, I'll call in someone who's beating someone who's murdering someone, poisoning someone, raping someone. That's what I think Class A felonies are, right? You know, burning down their house or taking to their car with a tire iron or something. But blowing smoke in a kid's face is a Class A felony? That would make me extremely reluctant to want to call that in. And when a punishment's so disproportionate like that, it might make others reluctant to call it in because they think, well, yeah, it's a bad thing, but I don't think the guy should, you know, go to prison for 20 years or be branded a felon for life and losing his voting rights and all that crap. We need to really rethink what our punishment and our standards are, especially when it comes to cannabis that can't possibly kill him, kill anyone.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
.420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Funky Roller Ring.
This is Big Daddy, and I want you to join me every Thursday night for some good old soul, funk, and disco at the Funky Roller Ring on 420 Radio. You dig?
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 11 after the hour. That's music from Atomic Kitten, covering the Blondie classic, The Tide Is High. And so am I. Hope you are, too. So, I was discussing the Beaverton Police Department's Facebook page out here in Oregon. Of course, the top story is the young man who blew the cannabis smoke into his infant's face and is facing a Class A felony for that. The very next post, or I guess previous, since it goes backwards in the timeline, involves a man arrested for indecent exposure 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. Man, like 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, lying face down in the dirt on Murray Boulevard. Man's 22 years old from Battleground, Washington, extremely intoxicated, having difficulties even standing. Officers were contacted by a woman who reported that while in the Asian Garden Bar, the man approached her and exposed himself to her through his unzipped pants. Public indecency, criminal mischief 3, and indecent exposure. So the alcohol, we got a guy flashing his dong at people. And the very next post, and this is the one I really wanted to get to, posted on March 20th. Local youth marijuana trends. Although 30-day marijuana use rates among Washington County 8th and 11th graders have been decreasing over the past 12 years, according to the Oregon Student Wellness Surveys, the rates are still unacceptably high and are accompanied by other measures which are cause for concern. Although almost two-thirds of 11th grade students say it is sort of or very easy to get marijuana, less than half think there is any risk of harm if they smoke marijuana regularly. So, I saw this little chunk of data and I went, wait a minute. What, did you just say that over the past 12 years, 30-day marijuana use rates have been in the decline among the kids, the 8th graders and 11th graders? Wouldn't that be the time when you all were complaining about how medical marijuana was growing by leaps and bounds in Oregon? I do recall this period of time since I was here. And they kept pointing out, oh my God, there's 15,000 medical marijuana patients. There's 30,000 medical marijuana. Oh my God, there's 45,000 medical marijuana patients. What about the children? What kind of message are we sending to the children? They'll think marijuana is harmless. They'll think it's medicine and they'll use it more. And yet, it declined. In 2002, about 23% of Oregon 11th graders were using pot monthly. 2014, that's down to like 16%, 17%. 8th graders declined from just under 15% to just over 5%. And that was during the time we raised our medical marijuana all the way up to 70,000 patients and instituted a system of dispensaries. In fact, it's interesting because they mentioned that over the past 12 years, there's been this decline. But as you look at the graph, it declined among the 8th graders, it declined 2004, 2006, and 2008. They do these biannually. And then it jumped markedly in 2010, and then declines markedly in 2012 and 2014. It's interesting to me, especially these last two declines in 2012 and 2014, because that's as the dispensaries were becoming implemented. What do you know when we put a large portion of the weed business in buildings where IDs are checked, for some reason there is less monthly marijuana use, a drastic 2 consecutive survey decline. Pretty interesting, wouldn't you say, that it seems to go counter to what all these guys have been saying about medical marijuana this entire time, that it would be sending the message to the children that marijuana is okay. It would relax and normalize the use of marijuana amongst the kids. And yet, the more relaxed it got and the more broadly it expanded, the fewer kids are using marijuana. Now, let's be careful. can't say correlation or causation in this sense. Regulating medical marijuana may not have had anything to do with this. May have just gone down on its own. May have be a trend. Maybe just a fad. Maybe marijuana is passe among the kids now, and they've moved on to, I don't know, whatever kids are doing these days. Jenkum? Who knows? But it's certainly not showing a correlation in the other direction. We're not seeing the correlation they predicted. Now, the other thing that's telling about these statistics, they say less than half think there is any risk of harm if they smoke marijuana regularly. This is that perception of harm metric that the drug warriors are so fond of. So how is it that fewer than half of our Oregon kids think smoking pot regularly is harmful, and yet fewer of them are smoking pot regularly? How is it that the perception of risk declines and their use is declining, contrary to what Kevin Sabet and Ben Court and all the Project Sam guys say would happen? How is that happening here in Oregon? See, this idea, first of all, when the Beaverton Police Department says that the rates of the youth use are still unacceptably high, it kind of suggests there would be some rate that's acceptable. Yeah, right now we're over 15% of the 11th graders are smoking monthly. That's way too high. We need to get that down to 10 or 5 or 2. I would presume their goal is 0. A completely unrealistic goal. But I presume their goal is no kids would ever smoke marijuana ever. Now, one of the problems I have with this is that it's way too broad brush, and it doesn't address what we really care about, and that's harm. These things don't happen in a vacuum, you know. If a kid is smoking pot, does that mean he's not smoking cigarettes? If a kid is smoking pot, does that mean he's not taking OxyContin? If a kid is smoking pot, does that mean he's not binge drinking? Or if a kid is doing those other things, is smoking pot helping to moderate that? Would that kid be doing more of those things in a more reckless way without the pot? See, on the other side is loath to concede, and our side is loath to address the fact that smoking pot among teenagers might be a harm reduction strategy in many cases. Might actually be better. Might be a kid who was loaded up on ADHD medication beforehand, who's still pretending to take the pills and selling them on the side, and instead using marijuana to deal with his anxiety or his depression or his OCD or whatever it is he's treating with these psychotherapeutic medications. It might be a good thing. But see, through our drug war lens, the only way we can look at it is kid use bad, must eliminate kid use, without even asking or trying to understand what the kids are using marijuana for and how it might be helpful, might be helping. I mean, I think every generation kind of points out how the next generation is living a much faster, more adult life, right? You know, that you know, kids today, oh, they're all connected with the cell phones and the social networking, and they've got more access to more information, good and bad, than any generation before. And then, you know, with my generation, it was the fact that we had, you know, computers and we had pagers. And the generation before that was the fact that there were telephones. And the generation before that is there was cars you could go make out in and so forth. Every generation, there's a new, bigger, better, badder, more adult world, more stressful world to have to deal with. Maybe marijuana is how some of those kids deal with that extra stress. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. Maybe all use isn't abuse, even when we're talking about teenagers.
You're really clouding the energy in this room right now.
Wasn't my intention. Hi in Hawaii asks, kids sell their pills to pay for pot? The hell I say. Say it ain't so. Hey, we got Electric Tuesday coming up next. Green Bay Wax. I know I'm going to like this. Two of my favorite things, Green Bay and Wax, coming up next.
Radio, the activist radio station. The Fingerboard extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com. Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. Based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden, Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We got no Electric Bob on the line for us today, unfortunately, so we're just going to go straight into the tune. This is from Green Bay Wax, and the tune is entitled Digi-10 No Clappers.
Save any more clappers and everything done. No clappers. No clappers. No clappers. No clappers. We'll be right back.
No pluppers. No pluppers. No pluppers. No pluppers.
If any more clappers and everything done. Any more clappers and everything done.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Hey, this is Big Daddy.
I like it.
I want you cats to join me at the Funky Roller Ring, right here on 420 Radio. It's like the groove in Soul Town, smashed together, with a greasy pork sandwich on the side, baby.
Two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
Funky Roller Ring.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, continuing this theme about what about the children? That's music from the Crystal Method. That's Grace featuring Leanne Rimes. But I was pointed out to this article in the Colorado Springs Gazette entitled Teen, colon, Colorado voters were duped into legalizing recreational marijuana. Duped, I say. Duped. They were fooled. And the story is of 19-year-old Caleb, who is a recovering marijuana addict, 41 days and 7 hours sober, to talk about his marijuana addiction. In 2 more months, they say, he'll be able to deliver his first clean drug test in many years, showing no presence of THC, the active ingredient in cannabis that produces a euphoric high and can affect the mind and body for weeks after use. Weeks, they say. I love that. There's this thought amongst some of these rehab folks that if you smoke pot, it's affecting your mind for weeks. And the way they base this is, well, you see, you got THC. THC is fat soluble. So the THC sticks around in your fat cells. And over time, your body is metabolizing it. And as it gets metabolized, that THC gets in your brain and it alters your perception and your thoughts. And so therefore, as long as there's THC in your fat cells, you're high. Wow. I sure wish I could find some of that pot. Tell ya. What these people don't ever enter into this part of the conversation is that we have a baseline kind of high going on all the time in our bodies. We have an endocannabinoid system. There is a natural level of this going on at all times. And a molecule of THC here and there is not causing a major profound impact in anybody's life. Now, while you're high, you know, right after smoking the weed and you've got hundreds of nanograms going around in your bloodstream per milliliter, Yeah, there's an impact on your mind. There's an impact on your feelings. But not a week later. Come on now. It's no wonder these kids don't believe you when you talk about how marijuana is going to affect them. Now, according to the story, Caleb was getting high every day, along with about 6% of American high school seniors, according to the federally funded Monitoring the Future. By his own admission, Caleb says he spent practically all his teen years blazed, stoned, still coming out of a mental and physical haze. Okay, so kid's got a problem. He's graduating with a 1.8 GPA. I have a doubt that marijuana was the biggest problem in Caleb's life. I don't know the kid, though. Maybe. But he says, quote, the marijuana industry is also misleading and there's a lot of trickery going on because there are big money in politics in this and not enough people standing up to do the right thing because they're afraid of losing something like money, power, privilege, or image. I compare it to big tobacco and the bogus 1950s ads pushing everyone to smoke cigarettes, you know, as an expression of personal freedom and with a mythical 9 out of 10 doctors saying it's all right. Only this time, it's not just a buzz from some nicotine we're talking about. Weed is a psychoactive, mind-altering substance. It is addictive, and I don't care what anyone says, it is being marketed to kids. All right, Caleb, so let's see. You're 19. And according to your own admission, you spent practically all your teen years stoned. All right, so if you're 19 and it's 2014 now, your teen years started when you're 13. That's 6 years ago. Let's see, 2014 minus 6 takes us back to 2008. And if I'm not mistaken, Caleb, there was no such thing as legal marijuana in 2008. Apparently, keeping it prohibited didn't stop Caleb from getting stoned every day. Now, did it? Now, I'm glad Caleb's gotten off the pot. I'm glad Caleb's not getting stoned every day. The idea of teenage kids getting like stoned to the bone every day bothers me. I don't like that idea. But I still do not understand why locking me up for my adult responsible use makes that situation any better. I don't understand how leaving criminals and kids in charge of the marijuana market makes that system any better. He says, he compares it to the big tobacco from the 1950s as if he has any experience with that whatsoever. And everything he's saying here comes right out of Project Sam talking points. And you know, he's probably hearing it. Hell, he's in Colorado. He might be hearing it from Christian Thurstone himself. This 19-year-old kid doesn't know about marketing or big tobacco or anything. He's just repeating what's been told to him in rehab. Standing up to do the right thing. What would the right thing be? Locking up adults who smoke pot? Because that didn't stop Caleb from smoking pot. Caleb got high every day before weed was ever legal, for 4 years before weed was ever legal in Colorado. I suppose Caleb might blame that on medical marijuana. Then Caleb needs to explain about all the other kids prior to 1996 who were getting stoned. Caleb needs to explain why in 1979 we experienced the greatest amount of high school marijuana use ever recorded. 60% of high school seniors had tried marijuana. 15% were doing marijuana on a regular basis. And it continues. There's some talk here from Dr. Nora Volkoff. People are voting without the knowledge. We have to counter investments of individuals wanting to change the culture and promote beliefs that marijuana is a safe drug. As opposed to, you know, the FDA-approved pharmaceuticals that I see advertised 1 year, and then the following year I get to see the lawyer ads for the class action suits against those FDA drugs and procedures. You've seen them? Are you a victim of vaginal mesh scarring? Did you take Advantia? Did you give your kids this drug that leads to gynecomastia, etc.? I've seen a lot of these lawyer ads lately. People suing because they took a drug, the FDA, that Nora Volkoff's National Institutes of Drug Abuse and the FDA approved as being okay. Now people are suing because it messed them up. But marijuana, that's the one. That's the one we really need to be warned about. And of course, Caleb says that it's a gateway theory. The weed, not alcohol or tobacco, came first. And the more I used, the more I drank, and the more pills I eventually popped. That doesn't happen to everyone who uses weed, but it happened to enough of us. It's a gateway. Right. Okay. And making it illegal helps how? Kevin Sabet's quoted in here. We're mortgaging our future for the almighty dollar. Make no mistake, legalization is about cranking up the number of heavy users, targeting the most vulnerable, as every industry selling an addictive drug does, and making money. That's it. If it were about getting people out of prison or increasing science-based prevention, there are myriad ways to do those things without ushering in Big Tobacco 2.0. Unfortunately, Kevin, you never say what the hell they are. The big pivot now is that, we don't have to have all these prisoners, and we can do science and we can have medical marijuana, but we don't need legalization to get to that. Okay, fine. What do we do to get to that? Well, we don't hear so much. So you support decriminalization, Project Sam? Great. Is that just for the users of marijuana, or does that count people who grow the plants and sell them? Oh no. Those people still need to go to prison. So the bulk of the market, the bulk of the people who get the real prison time will still get the real prison time, right? And this idea he keeps pushing this idea. Vice industries are about cranking up the number of heavy users and targeting the most vulnerable. Every industry selling an addictive drug does. And making money. Okay. Let's go with that. So we need to tax McDonald's, right? We need to have a Big Mac tax, or we need to have a minimum age to go to McDonald's. Because you know that vice industry, McDonald's, is all about cranking up the number of heavy users. They're looking for the whales, they call them, in the casino industry. They're looking for those steady stream of customers that come out and come in and buy a Big Mac every day, right? They're cranking up the number of heavy users. They're targeting the most vulnerable, right? They're going after the children and branding them, making sure that they're brand aware of what McDonald's is about and giving them little toys and Happy Meals to make sure that they buy that vice that McDonald's is selling. Or Budweiser, or Philip Morris, or any of the pharmaceutical companies. See, interesting to me how Kevin Smith's got this big problem with big marijuana. Doesn't seem to have much of a problem with big pharma, though. Doesn't seem to be calling for a repeal of the law that makes the United States one of only two countries in the world, New Zealand's the other one, that allows direct-to-consumer drug advertising. How come I never hear Kevin Sabet railing against direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising that is clearly designed to crank up the number of heavy users and target the most vulnerable? Why is that, Kevin? And the saddest part about this to me, from the perspective of someone who's lived through addiction, lived through family addiction, watched family members become addiction counselors, the saddest thing about that to me, oh, yeah, it is Dr. Christian Thurstone. Sorry, just looking through. Caleb's guy is Thurstone. Of course, of course. But the saddest thing to me here, and we get this with addiction people sometimes, right? There's this claim, there's this feeling that we are powerless over our addictions. It's that whole 12-step mentality. We are powerless. Powerless over our addictions. It's something other than us that made us vulnerable to this. And now they want to direct all of that powerlessness to those of us who seem to have the power to control it. What I want to know is, why is Caleb's powerlessness over marijuana reason to curtail my successful use of it? We don't apply that standard to alcohol. My dad was an alcoholic. That was his drug of choice. But when he got sober, he didn't go around campaigning for bars to be closed and alcohol to be prohibited and people that drink it socially with dinner to be subject to searches, harassment, arrest, and incarceration. No, when my dad got clean and sober, he recognized that his sobriety was his responsibility. That it was up to him to maintain his sobriety. That it was his disease to deal with, not society's disease. And I'm afraid that these Project Sam types are brainwashing these marijuana addicts into a victimhood role for their own agenda, for Project Sam's own agenda. Getting these kids to think of themselves as victims and to think and to blame their failure to cope with marijuana on not busting the people who can cope with it. I'm not going to put up with that anymore.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
With over a billion people in the world, chances are there's somebody out there just like you. There are software engineers, pastry chefs, artists, and people with medical conditions. And what do many of these people have in common? They use marijuana. It's expected that marijuana will be legalized in California. And when that happens, what will be the biggest concern? Safety. That's where we come in. High Def Transit is a discreet shuttle service that also serves as a mobile vapor room. Members can medicate on board while our certified drivers get you to your destination safely so you can enjoy the ride. So hop in, make friends, and ride safe. High Def Transit.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420 Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. That's the music from Gigi Barocco and Jane Bang with Crunkit. I like my... Continuing to read this Colorado Springs Gazette Clearing the Haze special section. Got some new details. Christine Tatum was involved in the production of these articles. They made a little disclosure a little further down in the article. That's nice to know. Christine Tatum, one of the most anti-weed harpies out there, married to Dr. Christian Thurstone. That's right, Christine and Christian. Dr. Christian Thurstone, Denver area rehab guy. And the story continues about losing his family, losing his motivation, using marijuana since the age of 14, getting it from the parents of a friend who had medical marijuana cards, who diverted it to him. He got his medical marijuana card at 18, began dealing weed, using hash oil, etc., etc., etc. And all of this is a sad tale for the kid. I feel bad for him. But none of this is an argument for locking me up. This is the thing that's really about this whole article. It's got every little Project Sam talking point in there. Oh, addiction rates, you know, 1 out of 6 kids get addicted. And that was when we were studying Woodstock weed, which was only 2% THC. We don't know what these dabs are going to do to the kids and yada, 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 yada. Like it's the end of civilized society. So this is what's going on in Colorado Springs. This is their addiction rates that they're trying to determine. More Project Sam, Kevin Sabet stuff is in here. And let's see, we're trying to find out where, what made him go in here. And they said, after years of pleading and efforts to find him treatment, his parents finally asked him to leave their home a couple of months before his high school graduation. Chief among their fears was he'd be a harmful influence on his younger brother. It's the toughest thing I had to do in my life, but I know it's what had to be done to save his life and protect the family, said Lisa Taylor, Caleb's mother. And after about a year after being forced to strike out on his own, Caleb decided to fight for his sobriety. I was seeing a lot of people older than me using weed and working in the same low-level jobs as me and being perfectly content. I just saw where my future was heading and it scared me. I texted my mom for help. Okay, so let me see if I can recap this. You're a teenage weed user. You keep using weed. You get your red card. You start dealing weed. According to the article, it said you were bringing in, what, $1,000? Let's see. He typically cleared $1,083 in profit per day, much of which fed his own drug habit, which had advanced from smoking marijuana to consuming hash oil. Okay, $1,083 a day, says that he was consuming hash oil 5 to 8 times a day just to feel normal. All right, and let's say you do a big, big monster dab. Let's say your dabs are a half gram. Let's say a half gram dab each. That's a pretty monster dab, even for a guy like me. Half gram dab each would be 4 grams of oil per day. Gram of oil costs you 25, 30 bucks. Let's say $100, $120 per day. So you were clearing 1,083, Caleb, per day. And it was costing you $100 a day. But when mommy kicked you out of the house and you had to pay the bills on your own, somehow you weren't making enough money to afford it, and life was kicking your ass, and that's when you decided maybe you'd stop smoking pot, huh? Interesting. And interesting also that you were this hardcore marijuana addict. And yet the first time you quit, you were able to quit, and you've been able to quit. You've been sober for 40 days now. Interesting. Let's go to our toll-free phone line at 84-420-RADIO. We got a call coming in from Idaho, my birth state. How you doing, Idaho? What's on your mind?
Hey, Border Hopper here.
Hey, what's up?
Well, two things. Hey, you know that that Sabat thing in Ontario was funded by City of Nyssa funds.
Oh, yeah.
They voted okay at the city council. But anyway, more importantly, have you seen the latest Senate bill in Oregon, 3400, I believe, Burdick rewriting the entire OMMP?
Yeah, I've heard some of this, yeah. The 3400 is still out there being pushed, and then it would require medical growers to keep track of how much they're giving out and limit it to, what is it, like, I think one of the...
For 7 years. Yeah. And limit you to 24 plants, period, so no more things like we see in the South.
Yeah, they're trying to get rid of...
Southern Oregon.
So, I understand they're trying to get rid of card-stacked gardens, and there was another proposal, I think, that's an amendment to that that would increase it to 48 plants total. But yeah, they're trying to get rid of the big mega grows, I think.
Yeah, and that's going to have a hearing in the next week or so. So
yeah.
Anyway, keep up the good work, man.
Yeah, will do. Thanks. And I'll be headed down to Salem tomorrow, actually. We're not going to have a live show tomorrow. We'll have a replay because Coleco and I are headed down to Salem in our Portland normal roles, I guess, to discuss some of this legislation. 3400 will be one of the things that we discuss. And it's a tough part of this because, and I saw an email come through about this 3400 earlier today on the DIP4 list, is the Oregon reformers list. And it's tough because there are people out there, and these are the ones that I hear from, these medical growers, like this guy Cliff, I'll call him, who's a grower who has a number of patients. More than 4, I think. He's growing for a bunch. And they're like the serious, like real bona fide medical marijuana. We're talking hospice patients, cancer patients, people with paralysis. I mean, your severe, real, heavy duty medical marijuana patients. And they're getting their medicine for free from this guy. And he's not, you know, he's losing money growing it for him because he's doing everything by the book and he's being legit and everything. And he freaked out over this bill. He's like, you're going to have me do all this paperwork and you're going to limit this. And I'm going to have to tell patients that they can't get any and blah, 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 blah. And so you bring these bills up, right? And they kill guys like that. They kill the real good actors in the medical marijuana world. The guys who are really doing it out of compassion and altruism. But the reason these limits come up is because our side, the medical marijuana side, refuses to do anything about or acknowledge that there's massive shenanigans going on. Massive shenanigans. And that's what these bills are coming out trying to fight. When that story came across the Oregonian about the largest medical marijuana garden in Oregon is a medical marijuana garden that does not serve a single Oregon patient. There are 104 medical marijuana patients in California for whom that garden is growing plants. 104 patients means 624 mature plants. A 624 plant garden that doesn't produce medicine for a single Oregon patient, although it does, because what that grower does is takes all of the weed from those 624 plants, and that's the product that gets sold at dispensaries in Portland and in Eugene and all over the state. And perhaps some of that stuff leaves the state as well and fetches a much higher profit. That's why Senator Burdick comes across with a bill like 3400 to kill these card-stacked gardens, to set the upper bounds at 48 plants, to require some sort of tracking of how much marijuana was grown and where is it going. Because so many people during Prohibition took advantage of every loophole they could in medical marijuana to supply the commercial market. Well, now that we have or are going to have regulations for a commercial market, they don't want to have all those big glaring loopholes sitting over on the side, making a mockery of and undercutting the purpose of the commercial regulations. So it sucks because on the one hand, I want to see a recreational market succeed, and the more shenanigans and loopholes that are in technicalities that are being abused, the worse it makes legalization look, the worse it makes the whole marijuana thing look. But on the other hand, I support guys like Cliff and these real, legit, compassionate growers, and doing anything to make their lives harder and make it more difficult to get medicine to the truly disabled and sick people that really need it also sucks. Now, if I could wave a magic wand, I would say that it's time for us to stop considering the difference in marijuana by the consumer who's using it and for what reason. It doesn't matter whether the person buying Bubba Kush is sick or not. It's still Bubba Kush. Where the difference comes is in the person who's providing the Bubba Kush. If I could wave my magic wand, we would have one commercial marijuana system. You want to grow, process, package, test, sell marijuana on a commercial level to anybody for any reason, it falls under one system. And then keep a medical system in place so that the card can act as a tax rebate at the point of sale, no tax on medicine, that the card could act as a permission or an affirmative defense to have larger possession amounts to be able to purchase more at the dispensaries, and the card would allow one to set up a personal relationship with a grower, not one of these card stack situations where some grower is harvesting patient cards just to be able to compete in a commercial market, but an actual one-to-one, by God, honest-to-goodness caregiver relationship. That's what medical needs to remain for. Of course, that would be in the rational world where I have a magic wand that makes everything happen the way I want it to, and that's not going to happen. So until then, we got to keep medical the way it is until recreational gets built up. Figure out what they both are, and then figure out how they work together. Let's not try to mix them all before we even know what they all are.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Well, time flies when you legalize, folks. That's all the time I got today. And again, no show tomorrow. I'll be down in Salem, but we'll be back Thursday with another live show for you. For everyone here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.